I'm Dimae Roberts, stage and studio. Right now we're listening to Escalade by Joan Jeanrenaud in her album Metamorphosis. It's been about a year since I featured Samantha Vandermeerva on Stage and Studio. She's the artistic director and founder of Shaking the Tree Theater, which just opened a show called Head, Hands, Feet, Tales of Dismemberment. It's an original production which combines three lesser-known fairy tales in the first act and an epic classical Greek tragedy as the second act. The show runs through November 5th at Shaking the Tree Theater, and we're going to go on location at her theater to learn more about it. And in the last part of the show, we'll hear a writer's read segment, this time from Central Oregon author Bing Bingham, whose newest book is called Shaped by the Land, Stories of the Rural American West, as told in the Dusty Dog Cafe. So stay with us. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dimae Roberts. Shaking the Tree Theater got its name from a Grimm's fairy tale story called Old Mother Frost. Now, in that story, Mother Frost has to go through a series of tasks to shake a tree holding golden apples. Whatever artistic director Samantha Vandermeerva does with Shaking the Tree Theater yields rich fruit. She's not a stranger to presenting fairy tales and myths for adults. That can be often more brutal and yet enlightening about humanity. I decided to go down to her theater to get a sneak peek at Samantha's new show, Head, Hands, Feet, Tales of Dismemberment, which is getting great critical response. This is our talk recorded at Shaking the Tree Theater at 823 Southeast Grant Street.
Well, we're in the lobby area and we're about to enter into the space. We wanted to make sure that you didn't really get a full picture of the space before you walked in. We wanted to have it to have a kind of a ceremonial feel. So you round the corner, and what you don't see here is there's usually a basin right here. And
with water or something?
With water.
Okay, well, don't give too many spoilers.
I don't want to give too many spoilers.
No, but it's really nice how you set it up here. And let's go to the main stage area.
Okay.
Because I don't know if our listeners can hear this sound here. Here, go ahead. I feel like I'm on a Foley set, and this is, you know, how you mix in sounds of people walking on gravel.
Yeah.
So, listeners, did you hear that? That was gravel. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
so
we've
describe
really...
Describe what this is and how big it is.
We've enjoyed it. We call it the gravel pit. I've heard someone refer to it as a human-sized litter box, but it's not that. The architects at RISA decided that they wanted some elements, you know, from the earth in our set, because we're taking you back to an ancient Greek story, and we wanted some rock. We wanted some sky, hence the blue walls, and then this wonderful wall that's been created out of Tyvek resembles so many different things.
Well, you've got some platforms here.
Yes.
And so people are using all these different size platforms.
Yeah.
And then so up into almost the roof, not quite the ceiling, but
yeah.
Describe this fabric here.
Well, it's made from Tyvek, which is a little bit stronger than paper. It doesn't tear, so it's a beautiful, it looks like paper, but it's more, what's the word? It's just, it's stronger, and it will stand up over time. Yes, it's divine. We like it. It's very alive. It catches the light beautifully.
So there's like a lot of fabric all crumpled up, and it's reaching up and almost like, I don't know, like it's growing.
Yeah, it's like schools of fish almost. But it can, yeah, like I said, it can represent a whole bunch of different things because we've got four different stories. So, you know, we needed something that would... be able to be a part of each story in a different way.
And evoke the imagination at the same time. Yeah. If listeners want to go on to stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio, you can see pictures of this right now. It's so amazing what you've done. Now, you worked with some architects, Riza. Yeah. Can you describe that and why you chose to work with architects for this production?
You know, it all started with a conversation. I think it was at one of our open houses, and I was thinking about one of the stories at the time, The Handless Maiden, and I wanted the audience to be able to descend during the story physically. I wanted them to be up high, and then I wanted them to be down low. And I just started chatting with Reed Leslie, who's part of the group of architects, and asked him, like, how can I create this idea of, you know, of the audience being able to descend? And he said, well, let me just throw it up on the board at our office, and we'll toss around a few ideas. And then that turned into a collaboration, and then my one story turned into four stories, and it just all kind of grew from there. And I had the most amazing conversations with this group of architects. I wish I could have them for every show, just to toss ideas around with, because it just opened up the imagination for what was possible. And this is the result of all those conversations, which I'm deeply grateful for.
Well, you've had a lot of imagination for all of your shows, right? But this seems like you've made it almost like a sculpture, you know, in some ways. And I think they do installations, don't they, as well?
Yes, they do. They do. So, you know, the wonderful thing about theater is that we have live people, we have live bodies, just like dance, we have live bodies moving through space. And it's wonderful to be able to engage with what's around us and spur on the audience's imagination. So we're not only telling a story, we're also offering a picture, an image, or a snapshot of images as you move through the story, which I think just allows you to deepen and open up and take the story in more easily. Yes, and it's just a lot of fun to see how a space can change also under light. So it's so many layers. You know, it starts as a sketch, then it's an actual physical space, and then you add in sound and lights, and, you know, you have your actors, and it becomes a multidimensional, living, breathing being.
I'm excited to talk more about it and to actually come see it at some point. I'm Dime Roberts. If you've just joined us, I'm with Samantha Vandamerva, artistic director and founder of Shaking the Tree Theater. And we are on location at Shaking the Tree Theater. And so, you know, let's talk about, you know, sit down for a
sure.
second. Let's sit down here in your comfy theater chairs. And how many people are you fitting in nowadays?
50.
Yeah. So it's a nice intimate evening. I think also facing it this way, I think acoustically is probably...
It's really good for acoustics. You know, we're learning about the space, and the more surfaces we have for the sound to bounce off, the more the audience can hear. And yeah, it's set up like a Greek amphitheater. We wanted to make sure that the seats were really high up so that the people at the top can look down into our gravel pit and see all the fantastic things that are happening with it. And it just helps with sound because we kind of have enclosed the space a little bit.
Yeah, you've done great work with that. Lots of reinforcement. So the full title of this new production is Head, Hands, Feet, Tales of Dismemberment.
Yes.
Ooh. So, you know, so right there, Tales of Dismemberment is your first clue that this is not a bunch of happy fairy tales,
no.
You know, even though they're Grimm's, right? The first part is Grimm's fairy tale.
Well, the first one is a Perrault, a French story, Bluebeard. The second one is Grimm, The Handless Maiden. And the third one is Hans Christian Andersen, The Red Shoes. And then we throw in a bit of Greek tragedy for fun.
Iphigenia.
Iphigenia.
Oh, you pronounce it Iphigenia.
I pronounce it Iphigenia. We actually got the go-ahead from a professor at Reed College who teaches Greek. So we're going with Iphigenia in Aulis. And yeah, It's also a story about the sacrifice of a young woman, of a young princess, so that the Greeks can go and fight in Troy, can go and fight the Trojan War. So we're looking at this idea of sacrifice, or sacrifice of young women, and what is the meaning of that? Why does the young feminine need to be sacrificed? Certainly in The Handless Maiden, you'll see that she becomes stronger for the chopping off of her hands. She goes through this initiation and becomes a queen at the end, knowing, and her hands do grow back, knowing much more about the world than she knew before. So we're looking at the idea of innocence, why the predator of the psyche is so attracted to the light and to the innocence of the young feminine, and why we demand sacrifice. And then when we look at the Greeks, where, you know, the audience have said, man, we haven't really learned, have we? We're still sacrificing innocent people in the name of war. Why haven't we learned in all that time?
So some really deep themes here, and you've explored that in the past with The Tripping Point and also The Wild Tales. You know, they were fairy tales. The Greek one isn't, but they were fairy tales, but yet, you know, fairy tales are full of bloody action and horrific things that happen to the main characters. Yeah. And it's all, you know, to explore something deeper within us. What are you exploring as far as your psyche, you know, by doing that, at least the first half of this with the fairy tales?
I think I'm really interested in betrayal. All of the stories are kind of born out of a betrayal for the main character, and how we recover from that as as people living in the world, how sometimes betrayal is necessary for us to grow up and become stronger and more awake. A lot of it is about waking up. And for me personally, you know, a lot of these stories are connected to looking at my past and the betrayals that happened early on in my life, and how I have a choice to heal from them or become embittered by them. And this whole evening is a great act of healing for me. And in speaking with some of the cast, for them too, you know, fairy tales are part of our dream life. Like, we all understand fairy tales on a very deep level. So coming to witness those without much explanation is a very deep witnessing and healing act. It's intense for some people. You know, we've had a couple people leave at intermission.
Really?
Yeah, because there's a lot that we're dealing with, and there's a lot that we're offering, and there's a lot of food for thought.
But so there might be a trigger warning for this, for some folks.
Well, I don't know if I would call it a trigger warning, because, you know, that makes me a little bit nervous.
It makes me nervous.
Yeah.
When I hear that.
Like, you know, we can't be too precious about what we put out into the world. We can't be too scared of saying it like it is. So yes, you might come and encounter some deep feeling, but I encourage you to stay with it, because again, like these heroines in our story, they've got, the only way through is through. Like, you have to travel the path and then, you know, process what's happened, and feelings are good, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of us have to deal with it, and it's just part of our life, and, you know, it's not scary at all.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I'm also wondering about the Greek drama, how, you know, it sort of fits in that. You called it Iphigenia? Is that what you... Okay. So in Iphigenia, in some ways you could call them, I don't want to say fairy tales, but myth is very, mm-hmm. very much tied to that, I guess, fairy tale mythology, too.
Absolutely. You'll actually find that all the fairy tales are probably born out of the Greek myths. So it's like we're taking the audience from what we know, you know, in our kind of Western culture, to what probably the seeds where it was all planted and sprung. We're taking you to that very ancient place. And I think the interesting thing that's happening for me is we're taking you, you know, Bluebeard starts without much words. It starts with a storyteller telling the story and the actors not really speaking. The second story is sung to us. It all happens in song. And the third, we add a little bit of dialogue. And then in the second act, you listen to words. You listen to us talking about these things we've done so easily in the first act. Oh, we have to, you know, chop off her hands. Oh, it's time to chop off the red shoes.
And it's all symbolic, obviously.
Yes. But I think in the Greek story, we actually get to talk about it and think about it as we would in our, you know,
it becomes more
real waking life.
More of a reality.
Exactly. Exactly. Kind of with myth sprinkled all the way throughout. But what we're talking about is war and a decision that has to be made so that the winds can blow, so that all these thousands upon thousands of troops can go and fight in a 10-year war. It's a big meditation on why. Why do we demand this sacrifice? Yeah.
It's not like we haven't been in a war that's been longer than 10 years, right?
Yeah, we know nothing about that.
Yeah. So it seems like it's also timely as well as, you know, digging deeper into our own, I guess, Western mythology, too. So yeah. I'm excited. You know, I've said this to you before, but I think you're one of the most inventive directors, you know, if not the, in town, in Portland, you know.
Thank you.
And the fact that you have created this space, this theater company, and you put out so much work each year. I always think of producing, too, as the most thankless job possible. What keeps you going? What keeps you wanting to do this? I mean, obviously the directing, I would assume.
Yeah. You know, that's a great question to ask the week after we've opened because... And I'm glad I didn't chat with you last week because I would have said, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm done. But this week...
That's normal, though.
That's
right?
Normal. I realize that. And this week, you know, after seeing audience responses to it and just the way the actors move through the show each night, it feels very ritualistic. And then to me, I feel like we're accessing something ancient that we don't necessarily know in our brains how to do, but we know in our bodies how to do. And to me, that's a bridge to this, you know, to this place where you can only go through making creative work. And this is the only way I can access that place. So if I have to keep producing shows to find that kind of ancient wisdom, or, you know, you never find all the answers. But you certainly become stronger and wiser in the searching of them. And it's what keeps me alive. Even though it's thankless, it's tiring. There's 1,001 minuscule things that you have to think of to make it happen. I would say today, on this day, that it's worth it. It's worth it because if you can open up the heart, you know, and mind of even one audience member, I think it's worth it.
I caught you on a good day.
You certainly did.
Well, just briefly, let's do a shout out for the rest of your season.
Oh, okay. So we're still on our descent into the darkness. We're going to have a little bit of fun with Venus and Adonis in December. We did it at the Coho Theater in summer. It's an hour of just delicious Shakespeare at his clowning best, and Rebecca Ridenour and Matthew Kerrigan just get to play these wonderful characters. So that's what we're doing in December. And then in late January, we're going to do Macbeth with a 7-person cast.
I can't believe you said the play.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know.
The Scottish play.
I've said it so many times so that I've reversed the curse.
Well, I think there is a rule that if you're actually producing it, it's okay to say it.
Okay, good.
That's what
good.
I heard when I was in it. Everybody got tired of saying Scottish play.
I know. Yeah, it's like saying he who shall not be named. We'll just say the name.
The name. So that's exciting.
Yeah, then in the spring we're going to do Miss Julie, a wonderful adaptation by Craig Lucas, which feels very contemporary, and that's, you know, adaptation of Strindberg's Miss Julie. So I'm terrified, but I'm
a simple 3-person play. Huh?
Yeah, just a simple little, you know. I'm excited, but I'm also scared, and I think that's a good thing to be
Scared of Miss Julie?
Scared of it all. Scared of Shakespeare, scared of dealing with Strindberg. But I know that I'll learn from it, and that's the point. I think that's the point.
You know, I don't know if it's just your process, but it seems like to me, if it doesn't scare you, it may not be worth doing.
I agree. We had that, you know, we decided to devise the three fairy tales. And I had that moment of terror. You know, I'd wake up every morning at about 4. It happens in the throngs of terror of like, what are we going to do? I don't know if these story, if we're saying anything valuable, but somehow you find your way and you do a lot of listening and you find some kind of truth. And then the terror subsides. Well, the terror then turns into everyone's going to hate it. They're going to think I'm stupid. I have nothing to say. So we got over that terror as well. And then you just let it go. And then you have to let it go. I mean, it's the craziest thing that we do in the world. But if it doesn't scare you, yeah, I don't think it's worth it.
That was artistic director Samantha Vandermeerva, recorded on location at her theater at Shaking the Tree Theater Warehouse, located at 823 Southeast Grant Street. Head, Hands, Feet, Tales of Dismemberment, directed by Samantha Vandermeerva, runs through November 5th, Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 5 p.m. There is a special Halloween show on October 31st at 7:30 p.m. All shows are at the Shaking the Tree Warehouse, that's located at 823 Southeast Grant Street, the corner of Southeast 9th and Grant in Portland. For more info or to reserve tickets online, visit shaking-the-tree.com or call the box office at 503-235-0635. 503-235-0635. You can find all that info as well as links and photos as well as the podcast of this interview at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. We're listening to Escalade by Joan John Renault in her album Metamorphosis, featured in the Shaking the Tree production of Head, Hands, Feet. You can find out more at iTunes. Next up, a writer's read segment, so stay with us. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Sometimes I ask writers to record a 5-minute story and send it to me. I call this a writer's read segment. If you have one you'd like to share, please record it and send it to me at studio@aol.com. Now remember to record your story in a quiet room. And sometimes you can use a phone app to do that too. So looking forward to hearing from any writers out there who want to be in the Writer's Read segment. Today's Writer's Read segment is from Central Oregon writer Bing Bingham. He often writes stories about his rural life on his blog site, Dusty Dog Cafe. And this story is about his dog.
For the Dusty Dog Cafe, this is Bing Bingham. Yours truly had been assigned to photograph a horse-drawn equipment sale. My ears were ringing with the auctioneer's chant. The smell of greasy corn dogs and overcooked pizza clogged my sinuses. There were too many sights to see, and I was worn out by the variety. It was time to take a break, so I headed to the parking lot. Leaning against the seat in my pickup's open door, I was sipping water and nibbling on granola when my dog jumped out of the cab. "Tired of sitting, huh? Well, why don't we take a walk and let's clear our heads," I told her. I slipped the rope leash over her head, more for the sake of the people around us than any need of hers. As we walked, I tucked the end of her rope through one of my camera backpack straps. She trotted alongside through the equipment aisles. That's when the old-timer noticed the rapport between me and her. "You got a pretty good handle on that dog," the old-timer commented. "Thanks. She and I spent a lot of time together. We've learned each other pretty well," I replied back, and then continued. "I got her from a hired man working on a ranch deep in the desert. It took me a month to convince her there were more than 4 humans on the planet. After that, we bonded pretty tight. The old-timer had long-distance blue eyes that looked to be more comfortable navigating a ridge than stepping into a crosswalk. His salt-and-pepper beard was so long that it probably caught any crumbs spilled while eating at a campfire. He knew how to introduce himself to a stock dog. Bending over, he waited until she sniffed the back of his hand. When she was ready, he squatted down and scratched her withers between the shoulder blades. Now, my dog is usually standoffish with strangers. She doesn't much care about the human race. So I was surprised when she leaned into his attentions while watching his face for visual cues. The old-timer told me, "When my last dog was a pup, I took her and my mule into the Colorado Mountains for 4 months. She didn't know anything other than me and that mule. That's when a person learns to relate to a dog." He continued with glistening eyes, "Thanks. I appreciate you letting me love on your dog for a while. You know, I think I'll get one more dog to see me out of this life." "Well, luck to you," I said, smiling and wandering off into the auction. A couple aisles later, my dog and I stepped aside out of the human flow of traffic. I reached down and patted her on the shoulder and said, "Thank you. I appreciate you giving that lonely old guy his dog fix." Well, she stared back at me, her ears erect and head cocked. Her body language indicated that she hoped there was a rat or a squirrel to be hunted somewhere in that auction. Quietly, we slipped back into the flow and began our search for that elusive little creature. In this world, moments of grace are all too rare. We should take advantage of every one we can. Sleep well. We'll talk again.
That was a Writer's Read segment from Bing Bingham. He's a writer, rancher, and storyteller from northern central Oregon. He lives on a remote ranch with his very dusty dog. If you'd like to hear or read more of his work, check out his Facebook page at Dusty Dog Cafe or his website, dustydogcafe.com. He's going to have an ebook version of his newest book, Shaped by the Land, Stories of the Rural American West, as told in the Dusty Dog Cafe. That's coming out later this month in October. If you're a writer and want to record a 5-minute piece of your writing, send it to me for consideration in our Writer's Read segment. Remember to find a quiet room when you're recording. You can email me an MP3 at stage, the letter N, studio at AOL.com. Right now we're listening to music by Clark Salisbury. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can hear the show on the podcast on iTunes or like us on Facebook.com/stage, the letter N, studio, or tweet me at stage, the letter N, studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.